I'm here.
And welcome to Double Cross Radio. We are experiencing technical difficulties, and we are live. Chuck, you have the mic. I'm going to pull everybody in.
Okay. Well, welcome, everybody, to another edition of Double Cross Radio, coming to you live from the Jefferson Republic. We have a little bit of a confusion here at the beginning. It seems like everything is happening right at the last minute, and it isn't happening the proper way, including a mistake by myself.
And welcome to Double Cross Radio. We are experiencing technical difficulties, and we are live.
Oh.
Chuck, you have the mic. I'm going to pull everybody in.
Okay. Well, welcome, everybody, to another... Well, we're going to get this all straightened out. a little loop going there, but it's okay. Tonight we're going to have a show where, if we can get Loma and Ray on, we're going to have a show about a project that they have going on in Grants Pass on Saturday, this Saturday. So for those of you who are local, this is going to be really awesome. It's going to be called Solutions Revolution. We also have, I'm going to be joined by Dennis Linthicum, and he's going to be involved with this, and we're going to be talking about some of the land grab stuff that's going on in the Siskiyous, trying to make a big, huge monument to lock out everybody out of the forests, stuff like this. So it's promised to be a good show. I think we're going to have to get a few things straightened out here. So, Drew, I'm going to give you the mic back, and I'm going to try and get stuff to Dennis.
Are we alive again?
I'm here.
Waiting on Drew. Is UCYM?
I don't think I'm connected to Drew yet.
I'm back. My router just fried. I bypassed it.
Okay. Well, can I add Dennis Linthicum to our call?
Yes, you can.
Or do you have to do it?
Nope, you can do it.
Okay, I'm going to do it.
I'm adding in Ray and Loma as well.
I don't see him.
I don't see either of them.
So, Colby, what do you think of that article that I forwarded you this evening about the shooting up in Seattle?
I did not see that yet, sir.
Don't call me sir. This isn't the military. I'm a working man.
Roger.
Well, it looks like there was a... sorry, reading the message here from UCY. Anyways, there was a shooting up at Seattle Pacific. Three people were shot. I think one person was killed. And so, yeah, another mass shooting that will definitely lead for more calls for gun restrictions, of course.
Roger.
So, okay, I've got a call coming in here.
I do too. Okay, we should be broadcasting now.
Okay, well.
I'm not monitoring the chat, so.
So I'm hoping that we're coming through loud and clear. Someone give me a thumbs up in the chat so I know that we got a signal going out to everybody. This is Chuck from Double Cross Radio, and we're being double-crossed tonight. So we'll see what's going on here.
Okay, we should be broadcasting now.
We are?
Okay.
Okay, I think we have broadcast coming on. Here they are. Whew. So, Double Cross Radio got kind of double-crossed today at the start of the show. And we're going to have to talk faster because we have not a lot of time to get things in. But we're going to have we're going to have Loma Wharton and Ray Kapitka back. They've been guests a couple times on this show. And they're going to be talking about a big event they have going on in Grants Pass on Saturday called the Solution Revolution. And so we're going to have them on and available just in a few minutes. Drew is working tirelessly behind the scenes to get everybody hooked up here. This was normally we have this all done before the show, but he was having some internet problems, and then his router got fried, and it got tossed to my lap, and I pushed a wrong button, which caused further complications. And so here we are. I hope that you guys, I appreciate all the people there in the audience that have been patient with us. I'm waiting here patiently to see when we get Loma and Ray on, and Colby also. So I don't know too much about this. I do know that one of the things that's going on around here is that there's a new push to declare the Siskiyou Mountains a national monument, which would effectively remove it from the United States in terms of you being able to access it. This is the Agenda 21 stuff going through. It's just going to have a I-5 corridor, and then everything else is going to be off limits for people. And so you don't get out of your car, you don't go in the woods, you don't climb Mount Ashland, it's all going to be taken off the market and out of production and out of access. And there won't be mining, there won't be logging, there won't be any recreation, there won't be hiking, there won't be anything. It'll just be a national monument, whatever that is. Ah, so it looks like we have Loma and Ray on now. Is that correct, girls? Ladies?
No, Chuck, I don't believe they're on. Ray needs to tweak her privacy settings so that I can add her to the conversation.
I see.
And so I've sent her a contact request, but it's virtually impossible to add her to this conversation at the moment. And so I'll keep trying.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, for those of you who are in the vicinity, attention Zori and anybody else within a 45 or 50-mile radius, yours truly is going to be giving a speech on Austrian economics to the Americans for Prosperity group on Tuesday, June 10th. It'll be at the Medford Library, I believe. And I think it starts at 6:30, maybe 7 o'clock. I will be posting something on the Double Cross Radio Facebook page for the exact time and stuff. I still don't know the exact time, but I just finished my speech earlier today. I'm pretty pumped up about it. I held it down to 10 pages. I mean, there's a lot to talk about in Austrian economics. So, let's see. Yes, Salt Lake City Mike. I do remember how the Clintons declared the Escalante Staircase National Monument in Utah, and they took all that coal off the market, and that benefited China immensely. Well, the same thing's going to happen in the Siskiyous. There's a huge deposit of titanium, the largest known world reserve. The second largest reserve is in China. And, of course, by taking that off the market, it makes their reserve much more valuable. So there's a lot of reason for all this happening. It doesn't have anything to do with protecting the environment or saving it for future generations. It all has to do with enriching a bunch of people in China. So, anyway, I get word here that we have Loma and Ray now, and they're here. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
Oh, and God, I was in harmony and everything.
There we go. We're good at that.
Okay. I started kind of giving the audience a little bit of a preview of what we're talking about tonight, but I really don't know the full extent of what the Solution Revolution is going to be about, so I'm going to turn the mic over to you and let you start telling us about it. We have a pretty good group of local listeners every week, so I think this is going to reach out to, maybe with podcasts or anything, we might reach 50 or 60 people with this, and maybe hopefully they'll all attend. So without further ado, we have Loma Wharton and Ray Kapitka, which I've already kind of introduced when we weren't on the air. But they're here to join us and tell us about their big event on Saturday in Grants Pass.
Thank you, Chuck. First, let's give the location and time of the event. It's this Saturday. Doors open at 9 o'clock, and the event starts at 10 o'clock sharp until about 4 or 5. And, you know, a lot of people in the area have already heard Ken Ivory speak. And what we want people to be aware of is that this is not his usual presentation. We're bringing Ken back. We actually had the first event in Reno where we had about 52, 53 people show, everywhere from sheriffs to county commissioners to state reps to regular landowners. And we had Ken and we had Doyle Shamley, and we first opened up this conversation about 2 years ago in October in Reno. Well, this is a follow-up because Loma and I have continued to go around in Oregon. We've talked to folks in Idaho, Southern Washington, Northern California to get them educated on this land issue, what can happen locally, but ultimately what the true fix is the states asserting their 10th Amendment rights. Becoming sovereign states again. And so in bringing Ken back, what we want to talk about is we'll be discussing successes around the western states. We'll be talking about what the counties can do, what the people can do, how to organize, how to be effective activists, and we will also be addressing elected officials and those currently running for office who've moved into the general election, and educating them and giving them an opportunity to get their tough questions answered by an expert in the field. Some people may not know this, but just to kind of inform them, Ken Ivory is an attorney. He's also Utah State Representative, and he is the architect and sponsor of their House bill to take back their statehood. I believe it's House Bill 146. And it has passed. The governor signed it. And basically they're waiting. So we will get an update as to what's been going on there, how they've been organizing their counties to get ready to hit the ground running and what they're doing, you know, without waiting, what they can do. So we'll be answering the tough questions like jurisdiction, law, what is a regulation and a policy? Who needs to abide by that? How do we coordinate, cooperate, and collaborate effectively? And with proper standing. So all of those things are going to be the tough questions so that we, the people, can be reminded, number one, we're the boss, we're the parent. Number two, our county government is kind of our firstborn children, so to speak. And we need to take back control of that. We need to hold their feet to the fire and make them abide by their oaths of office. And do what's right under health, safety, and welfare.
Yeah, if I can, I don't mean to cut you off. We are also joined. Finally, got Dennis on. We're also joined by Dennis Linthicum, who is joining us tonight, and he's also involved with this effort, I believe.
Yes, yes. He is. Dennis will be presenting to us just exactly the economic impact of those of us here in the western states, but more importantly, here locally. And I think people will be shocked.
Yeah. So Dennis, do you have a preview of your comments and talk that you're going to be making? Oh, is he not here? Is he having trouble with his? Oh, I'll send him a message.
While you're waiting for Dennis, Colby, I'd like to interject something here. I don't know how many people are familiar with the Admissions Act, but when Oregon became one of the states united, they came in on equal footing with the first 13 colonies. And we gave up title to the land, to the United States, for them to sell it. 5% comes back to the state, for the school funds. And then when the land is sold, which is required to be sold under the Admissions Act, not required to be kept by the United States, then the state can tax the private property and the taxes. Well, in 76, with the Travel Management Plan, Congress changed the policy and stopped selling the land. They can't change policy. They have to follow the regulations. And so this basically is the state taking back their jurisdiction, taking back federal controlled land, because they do not own a stick of land in this state. There's never been anything ceded to them under the Weeks Act. And it's the counties and the state taking back control of their lands, managing them, and putting the people of this county back to work. It's very simple. And it's time to put the Fed back in their 10-mile square, Washington, D.C., and become a sovereign state and sovereign counties again.
Okay, so we hear that Dennis is supposed to be connected and he can hear us, so we'll try again to see if he's there. Dennis, are you there?
Dennis, do you have your phone on mute?
No, he said he was not muted. The microphone, whatever, isn't muted. Okay, well, our problems continue tonight. He's talking and we don't hear him. So,
Dennis, if you go up in your settings, you might have an issue with your mic on your computer.
I see him now.
Hi, Dennis.
Hold up a sign.
Do you know sign language?
We had this problem one other time. I think we should probably disconnect him and try and put him back on.
But it could be a headset issue if he's got something jacked in, a microphone or something like that. It could be a loose connection.
Yeah.
It could have something to do with his input-output settings on his computer.
Okay. So
you got a call and you hit audio settings, you can figure that out, Dennis.
Yeah, while we're trying to get that squared right, I have some questions for
Ray. I think we heard you.
Okay, one, two.
Yay! Yeah.
Okay.
You're so there.
I'll turn off the video here just to save bandwidth. You still got me?
We still have.
Okay, good deal. So there were several questions about, what am I specifically going to be talking about? What's really interesting is this gets really complex really fast when you talk about possibilities. In terms of economics, there's no such thing as stasis. Everybody responds to the market around them. They respond to incentives and whatnot. And so we can only talk in real generic terms about what the possibilities are. And a little bit that bothers me, because that's what the liberals do all day long. They talk about how great the world will be once they get in charge. And quite frankly, I think what we need to do is preserve our rights. We need to focus on, this. The whole concept of the federated republic, where it's a collaboration between the states, it's a contract to pawn a few items, an enumerated few list of items, off to the federal government. Over time, the federal government has usurped our authority and has taken more and more bandwidth from the marketplace. And that's the tragedy that we see today, is people don't realize what it was like in the old days. And that's why Ken Ivory drives all the way back to the Solemn Compact and talks about the promises that were made to the colonies before the Constitution of the United States was ever developed. If you'll think about it, the Constitution, the Revolution, wasn't so much a revolution in the modern sense of the world. It was a defensive maneuver where the colonies were trying to preserve the liberty that they had for a couple of hundred years on the North American coast. That preservation was being hampered by the crown as they tried to usurp local authority, local legislative colonial authority. And the colonials finally said, hey, enough of this. This is our right, our land, our dominion. And they took it back. That's what we need to do as modern day Americans.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, when Dennis reached out to us to assist, it was a blessing, really. You know, this is the first event like this that Ken has done, and it's kind of the next step from what he's been doing. But so many in this area, they get it. They've heard the foundational information. They understand it. What they want to know now is, how do we put it into action? How do we support this plan? How do we get it working here in our counties and in our state? What can we as the people do? And that was Loma and I's focus in putting this together, was a plan of action. We're tired of events that are basically just gripe sessions. You know, come, air your feelings, you know, go home, get pumped up, and 3 days later you're back to the, you know, daily grind. We can't do that. We can't afford to do that anymore. We have to come together. We have to start working together. We also have to realize that this is an issue that crosses all lines, whether it be political, economic, race, religion, it doesn't matter. This is about our most fundamental rights and principles. And for instance, in Plumas County, I was talking to the sheriff there tonight, and their county is up in arms because the U.S. Forest Service gave them notice, 11 days notice, that they were going to kill all of the fish, and I believe it's Lake Almador, and full of trout, because they're worried about the possibility of 9 yellow toads who might fall in the lake and get eaten by the fish. Well, and I realize that I'm really simplifying this, but truly it is that simple. And the people there are just up in arms. Sheriff Hagwood said that it has really brought the community together. You have all kinds and all sorts working side by side and finally really talking to each other and getting to understand that this is a human issue.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with classes or groups or sex. It is a human issue. It's an issue of life and liberty and prosperity.
That's well said. And it's also decision-making being made by people that we don't elect. We don't even know who they are in a lot of cases. They're just name on a piece of paper. We don't know who that is. They live thousands of miles away in a lot of cases. Or if they do belong in a regional office, they're doing somebody's bidding who's thousands of miles away. So there's no input that we can really make on these issues by relying on the present system. We've been ostracized from that system. We're no longer included in it. And this is a way that we can kind of take back control of the place where we live, you know, own our own home again.
Absolutely. I mean, it is so necessary. Water is life. And when you drive through our country, okay, especially here, well, all over Oregon, pretty much, and you see how overgrown it is, use some common sense, folks. Don't just listen to what you're told, because the emperor has no clothes. If you drive through and you look, common sense is going to tell you, if you have an acre that is overgrown with too many trees, you know, there are two things that are inevitable. Number one, it's going to use up every drop of water that it possibly can just to survive. And number two, it's going to start being a foundation for disease because there's no airflow. There's no sunshine, you know, to keep the bacteria and the fungus in check. There's not going to be any wildlife because they can't see to hunt. I mean, you know, don't just listen to people because they've got a few letters behind their name or they've got a title in front of it. That doesn't mean anything. I know a lot of folks with MBAs and doctorates when I was in Texas who were sacking groceries, putting watermelons on top of eggs. Come on, give me a break.
That sounds like it. It's the same way in economics profession. There's a lot of the people that make the most noise have the least amount of useful information to give. We've also finally been joined by Eric Dubin tonight, and he has just a couple things he wants to say, and then he's got to get back to a meeting. So I'm going to interrupt what we're doing and give the floor to Eric for his piece. Are you there, Eric?
My speech.
Yeah, your speech.
Well, hello, everyone. It's good to join you all. I heard about the last 2 minutes of your conversation through the phone, and it's neat. I'm glad you guys are all putting on the Solutions Revolution on Saturday. I'm looking forward to being out there, and hopefully have a good crowd. One of the things that I just wanted to, remind people that's on topic in this whole context of our public lands, that about 2 weeks ago, President Obama declared a national monument in New Mexico of some 600,000 acres. And it's very unusual for a president to take an action like that midway through a term. More often than not, they'll seek to hide from the ramifications of the stroke of the pen of the Antiquities Act to create national monuments and make those declarations literally in the last week of their term in office. And many people in Southern Oregon are well aware of the Siskiyou Crest National Monument proposal looming over our heads, and Stop Land Grab and a number of other organizations in Southern Oregon and a few of our compatriots over in Northern California were able to get that thing off of the radar for the time being. But even though advocacy groups like KS Wild in our local valley are quiet about this, it's our assessment that the risk of a national monument being declared in the not-too-distant future, basically sometime within the last remaining years of Obama's term, is much, 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 much higher now. And we have to make a call to people who care about public lands and this issue to start organizing once again to stop it, because if we don't, it's going to be declared, in my estimation. And that's one of the things that we'll be talking about when we have a table out at Solutions Revolution on Saturday, and I encourage everybody in the audience that's going to be coming to the event to stop on by and talk to us about it. And we're beginning to ramp up our organization's effort once again to fight it.
Eric, before you go, I want to mention, while we were kind of trying to chew up some time while I get everybody connected earlier, I just kind of vamped a little bit and had a little help from the audience. Salt Lake City Mike was reminding me of the Clinton administration and how they had declared a vast portion of the Utah a national monument and taken a lot of shale oil.
Grand Staircase.
Yeah, the Escalante Staircase, whatever it's called. Yeah. Yes, and
staircase
removed
Escalante,
a lot of
1.9 million acres.
Yeah, and what it did is it was removed a lot of coal that was made a lot of Chinese people a lot of money is what it did. And it was a payback for the Chinese funding the Clinton election campaign. And right now, I think that this is, the next apparent heir to the throne is going to be Hillary Clinton. And that she has that same last name because she was probably the brains behind the operation. It certainly wasn't Bill. And I think they're trying to remove this Siskiyou Mountain area from Northern California, Southern Oregon, from our region. That's where we live. They're trying to make it a national monument because it removes a bunch of titanium from the market and allows China, who has the second largest deposit of titanium in the world, it allows the value of that deposit to increase quite a bit because it no longer has to worry about the titanium here being mined. So I think there's a lot of skullduggery. There's always a money trail, I think, for these things when they happen. And there's probably something in New Mexico, too, that is benefiting somebody somewhere else around the world at the expense of the people in New Mexico. The people in Utah have had their economy. It was really bad for their economy, but my tip of my hat to them, and they're going to kick the government out of there. Maybe they can reclaim that land and tell them to go pound sand about their national monument. This is really getting out of hand. This is turning into like a monarchy. The king just makes his dictate, and then we all have to behave in that manner. It's just, this is something that's really serious.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to just add, because Eric has this great financial understanding, there are two facets to the economics in the money trail. One is the cronyism that you were referring to, Chuck. The other is the deficit spending. The federal government can engage in suicidal economic policies because there's always money coming off the printing press to cover it up. And so they actually have the freedom to paper over the tragedies that they create, and they buy complacency from the public. They buy complacency from county commissioners and the public and state representatives all the way up and down the line, because there's always a grant, there's always some funding source, there's always a tough economy in some part of some state, and they'll go bring the federal government and their basket of goods in. And really, it's quite a fairy tale to think that you can debase the currency and continue the economy. And that's a tragedy we have yet to see, but you know, there's no doubt it's on the horizon.
Couldn't agree more. It's exactly what
I'll throw out one quick thing, and then I'll exit the kitchen with one less cook to get in your way. But one of the things that I'm really excited about is that Josephine County's chapter of Campaign for Liberty, in combination with Stop Landgrab, has launched a brand new effort to revisit how to push back against Agenda 21 in the entire valley. And that whole meeting took place about a week ago. It's brand new. There's a lot of energy. We had probably about 45 people show up to talk about that. And there's going to be a lot of good things coming from it. So stay tuned. And once again, you know, talk to us when we're out at the event next Saturday. Come to the table and we'll tell you more.
Okay, Eric, before you go, you also have some exciting news about an upcoming interview you're going to be conducting.
Yeah, well, I'm almost hesitant to even mention it because I'd be afraid of jinxing it, but probably in about 14 hours, I'm going to be on the phone with Ron Paul, and we're going to have him on the Silver Doctor's weekly Metals and Markets Wrap show, which Dennis was gracious enough to come on 2 weeks ago, so we're expanding to getting a lot more people who are discussing issues of politics and getting our Silver Bugs and Gold Bugs audience to get more politically active. And we're the largest precious metals weekly metals radio podcast out there, so it's a good thing that we're kind of cross fertilizing people who are interested in precious metals and sound money with just politics issues that they may or may not be familiar with, like public lands and Agenda 21 and the broader context of how basically we're dealing with forces of centralization versus forces of freedom. And it's really not an issue of right or left, but right and wrong. So on Saturday, if you folks out here in the audience want to check it out, it's silverdoctors.com, silverdoctors.com, and it should be up on Saturday morning.
That's great news. Good job, Eric.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'll end up speaking more to him over the phone than when I did a couple weeks back when he was in Hayward, California, and I stood in a line that was probably 200 feet or 200 people long, having book signings in 5 seconds to talk to Dr. Paul.
Hey, Eric and Dennis, could I ask a favor of the two of you?
Sure.
You know, sure. Chuck has brought up the titanium, but there's so much more in our lands over here as far as the minerals and metals and natural resources under the ground. And what would be great is to see a list of, you know, what this area contains so that people can kind of start wrapping their head around why the land grab over here, why such a strong interest. You know, having that available, I know that we have thallium, we have all of the Burrell family, and, you know, those are high dollar commodities because they're finding newer ways to use them in technology.
And that work's already been done. And I can get you in touch with people who've done that very work.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Thank you so much.
Well, so I got to go, but okay. I'll leave you guys. And
Eric,
having me on, Chuck.
Thank
you.
See you
Saturday.
See you Saturday. Thanks.
So now that we have that out of the way, I tell you, this is when you lose the first 15 minutes of your show. It seems like he kind of gets compressed a little bit. But let's get back to what we were talking about, if I can remember where we were. Before we talk about this, we were talking about the issues of lands. And I actually think a lot of people in our audience are familiar with the Bundy Ranch situation. Exactly what's happening there is happening in different versions of that same takeover happening all across the West. If you've seen the Agenda 21 map that came out in the 1990s, it shows the West basically being depopulated. There's going to be a few population centers in the major cities, and there's going to be access roads or highways are going to just work as these corridors which you can go between cities, and there won't be anybody else living out there unless you're in a city. They're going to push us all into these pack and stack living accommodations in major cities. I'm not sure if Medford will still exist. It probably will, because it's the only city for a couple hundred miles, but I'm sure a lot of the smaller cities up and down the West Coast will just disappear. They'll become no longer, they'll be ghost towns, and you won't be able to go and visit them because the roads will all be closed to them. It'll, you know, it's just, that is their utopian dream, anyway, from looking at this map. They want to return it and rewild the West. And you guys think I'm making this stuff up? This has been, I've known about this stuff for 30 years, or 25 years, since the early 90s, beginning of the Clinton administration is when I first heard about it and saw the map. And when they stopped them temporarily because they took the map to the House of Representatives, and when the politicians saw that their jaws hit the floor and bounced up and slapped some sense into them, this is really, really a real thing, and it didn't go away. They didn't stop it. They just postponed it. And now another generation has gone away, and they're trying to bring it back and reintroduce this program. And we just have to say, no, you aren't going to do this. It's a real threat, and we need to stop it. So anybody else have more to add to that or comment on this?
Well, you know, if anybody has heard about Agenda 21, and this is Ray, if anybody's heard about Agenda 21, that's what you're talking about. And that was a UN objective that came out of one of the summits with Rio. Italy. Out of Reno? Rio?
Rio.
Rio.
Under Bush.
Under Bush. And so, you know, this does go way, way back. And people didn't believe that it was going to happen. They didn't believe it then. You know, we were called kooks 7-8 years ago when we started educating on this. And then 3 years ago, those same people who were calling us kooks are coming up to us going, you know, you guys might be onto something here. So people are waking up, and that's what's important. But we've got to get the statistics in front of them.
The people aren't getting smarter, and you can tell that just by, you know, picking up some of the founders' writings and reading that, and then reading the stuff that's, you know, getting printed today. Any American alive can text or tweet or actually finally figure out how to use Skype, and then ask them to balance their checkbook, and they don't even know what that means, because they can always throw it on the Oregon Trail card or a credit card and just pay it at the end of the month. And they don't understand the concept of money, as you were just asking. They don't understand that inflation is robbing their reserves, robbing their savings, robbing their future. They don't understand that they get the picture that when cell phone prices drop, that's a good thing. And they somehow magically think when home prices go up, that's a good thing. But look at when a cell phone drops from $69 to $29, you may pat yourself on the head. But when your home goes from $250,000 to $300,000, you cannot appreciate that. That is $50,000 of your future earnings that's getting absorbed into the banking system. So people don't really understand money, and this is why this is a powerful conversation to have.
Well, I think they understand the more or less. You know, right now we're living in welfare counties and welfare states.
Yeah, and they're making a confusion there between money and wealth. The wealth is the stuff you produce. The timber you convert into dimensional lumber, and the minerals you take out of the ground, and even the people you take down the rivers on float trips and fishing things, is whatever. All that stuff, that is wealth, goods and services. The money that pours out of Washington, D.C. and the Federal Reserve is just a pretend money. It's pretend wealth. It's not real wealth.
Another way to think about it, though, is, I'm 30 years old next Friday. How many people my age do we have that can go out and do any general labor job that we would have had to do back in the 50s, 40s, or even before, and have a productive amount of skills that if something falls awry, they can take care of themselves? I mean, by design, a lot of our own technological advances have blinded people to the point where they just don't care to do anything of productive value.
They've made us lazy.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, let's just say it like it is. And, you know, Dennis, you're absolutely correct. I agree with you 100%. We are ignorant where a lot of those things, you know, come into factor. We've got to, our message has to be directed to a fourth grade level. And it's really sad when you've got newspapers like, you know, Washington Post and New York Times are even now printing their articles on a fourth, sixth, seventh grade level so that more and more people can understand it and comprehend it. But we're going to have to get our message down to there. And I think people understand, hey, look, we can get a welfare check for $1.7 million. Or we can take our lands back within the borders of our counties, start working them ourselves, and we get a check for $7.6 million. Which one is better? Well, I think they're smart enough to understand, okay, 7-1. Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, well, that's a great example. I understand your point. I think all of us in this conversation, and actually probably most of the radio audience, understands this. But what we need to do is we need to be able to communicate this to the public at large, and that's where you're describing, you know, boil it out to some really simple things. Which is larger, a 1 or a 7? And then we'll just all sit around with our fingers crossed and hope they make the right choice.
I saw something from the news articles yesterday that kind of didn't shock me at all. The Justice Department revised domestic terror unit that was from Oklahoma City area that actually got canceled after 9/11. Did anybody else see that one?
No, I didn't.
Apparently, the Obama administration is reviving a law enforcement group focusing on politically motivated domestic terrorists, which would be anyone that is not in favor of what they're doing, for the most part. And this was from actually a couple of sites. When I saw it on Democracy Now!, I kind of said, yeah, that's probably a legitimate action being placed, but that was yesterday's news. I mean, that pretty much labels every one of us.
Now, the key is they get to define it, so.
Roger.
They can selectively enforce it that way.
I feel like I'm in good company.
Yeah.
I could agree on that.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that that is hard to filter for the public at large, you know, they see a number like GDP, or they see a number like the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. And, you know, for the average person out there, they just see the headline, they read it, and they don't recognize that the definitions have been changing all along, and it doesn't mean what you've always thought it meant, or what it did mean 30 years ago when it was a good number, when a statistic represented something true in the world. And today it doesn't represent what's true in the world. It represents what's true in the eyes of the beholder, and that's what they want to communicate, so that's how they redefine the numbers. A real funny item, we just heard Colby mention, you know, this news article where he's talking about domestic terrorists. The Financial Times reported a couple of days that in Britain, they decided they would categorize prostitution and as part of their GDP. And they actually did the statistics, roughly 60,879. So that's a rough number. I don't know how they got to 789, but roughly 60,879 prostitutes took an average of 25 clients a week in the year 2009 at a price of 67.16 pounds sterling. And they jammed that into their GDP. And it's like, yippee, if we could only account all of the things that you and I do on a daily basis, you know, that they want to inflate numbers and make it look like Britain's economy isn't suffering. Britain's economy is suffering every bit as much, if not more, than the U.S. economy. But as long as this fiat money just keeps coming off the presses, we can continue to make people feel like economy's good. And this is something that is very difficult to communicate because the average Joe looks at CPI and thinks it means what it says it means, and it's nothing close to that.
Yeah, and it's really patently ridiculous that we would include government spending in a number that's supposed to tell us how our economy is doing. And back when I was a young kid, back in the 60s, government spending wasn't such a huge percentage of the overall spending in this country, so the GDP was a more accurate number, even though it still was distorted by including government spending. But the more the government has become, and actually it's spending more than we produce now, I believe, or it's spending more than we borrow.
It's totally out of control.
But it's whatever, the amount of money the government's spending is, and they don't deliver anything for what they spend. They actually, I wrote a piece on this that Eric put in his News Doctor's site, that every time the government spends a dollar, they got to break a window to do it. I mean, it's the Bastiat thing. It's that they destroy wealth somewhere else in order for them to spend money. They don't ever produce anything that creates wealth, so they always have to destroy wealth to get the money that they spend. And the more they spend, the more it hurts our economy, and yet they look at the GDP and say, look how it's grown by a tenth of a percent last quarter, and it really shrunk by probably 7 or 8%.
Yeah, you're right. That government number in there is just, you know, it's eye-poppingly absurd, and yet nobody in the mainstream economic world questions it. Only the Austrians are paying attention to this stuff. And everybody else is just thinking, oh, yep, that's the way the world works. And it will take a fair bit of education is a big, big, big issue. I think that's why Diane and I, when we were on the road, we used Holly Swanson's two books, Set Up and Sold Out and Training for Treason, as fundraising gimmicks, just because those two books are so wonderful. We knew people would be clamoring to get their hands on them, and that was good for us as a fundraising item that we had out on our table. And that she's really nailed it when it comes to learning, teaching your children, teaching your grandchildren, teaching the next generation these ideas about liberty and these ideas about freedom and these ideas about economics and about the social constructs that are embedded within the environmental movement.
Yes, they are. That's you know, Holly was actually the person that I heard her on a radio show that got me. She's a local person too, or she was then. But
yeah, she's from Jackson County. She's from White City. Yeah,
and she's the one that got me excited about this, and where I found out about that map I was talking about earlier. That was through her. So she's been all over this subject for a long time. She really knows what she's talking about.
Right. She's been on it since 93. That's 20 years.
That's just about it. The start of the Clinton administration was it.
You know, Dennis, you bring up another good point, too. And I think something that we have to do is to start looking at this less as unfortunately, we can still keep the education in the groups who actually want to learn, but we really do need to start utilizing the tactics of the other side, and that's marketing and, unfortunately, propaganda. You know, we are in a soundbite society, and if we don't start utilizing that and becoming poignant and getting those one-liners, get people to think, you know, if I saw a billboard on I-5 that says if your country has to use prostitution to bolster its bottom line, something's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to have to be kind of that in your face sort of thing. Because until we do, and until we get people questioning and thinking again, it's going to be very difficult to really garner the masses. And so we really do have to focus our message and, you know, bring it down to those sound bites and propagandas and things that make you go,
Yes. And so we are running out of time. I want to thank Ray and Loma and Dennis for joining us tonight. And you can hear some music out there. It's our fade out music. I also want to just let everybody know that the Siskiyou ballot measure lost 55% to 45%, but that was a pretty narrow loss, and there aren't that many voters there. So I bet you if they could turn 500 people's votes around, they could withdraw. They could accomplish stuff. So it's possible to do, and they almost got it done once. I think they're going to get it done next time. See you next week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye.